session, which I'm
willing to take any question. Well, perhaps I'll start, and Bhushan and Mike, please chime in here. I think that in the presentation I alluded a little bit to it, is that we've created really some very nice opportunities for us, you know, to create very significant mid to long term value, and the mistake we should not do is try to be very, very short term oriented here. So. Contrary to 2019, it means that you will see some increase in SG&A, for example, for this year. Then the other thing I alluded a little bit to is the concept of core EBITDA, which is really nicely showcasing the underlying performance of the company, which continues to grow and which will continue to grow. But of course, it's also fair to say that the other income line will not continue to be at the same level as it is today. So I think it's important, if you look at our numbers for the coming years, that you really focus on top line, on top line sales, on core EBITDA, rather than what you may have been looking at in the past, other income. I know, Mike, if you want to add something.
Yeah, I mean, there's some things are going to happen in 2020 that, you know, are expected. And just to remind you, we have seen the launch of a generic of Aczone 7.5 in the U.S., so we will see some impact there. As Peter mentioned, SG&A will invest in these new product launches. We were aided a little bit in 2019 by the divestment of the aesthetics business in the U.S., which actually freed up resources, so that was part of the reason why we were able to keep the SG&A a little more in check in 19. And the other income, we'll be switching in 2020 from the more milestone-based income you've seen over the last couple of years from AstraZeneca to a pure royalty model. And you will see a change in that line.
Perhaps one comment I would add is I've talked to you a lot about, you know, the dermatology business. We still have a decent business in Spain, which is very nice, which is very profitable. And you may know we have a new government in Spain after lengthy debates and many attempts to have a government. And, of course, we don't know what that government would keep as a surprise to pharmaceutical companies in terms of, you know, pricing or whatever measures they would take. So this is a little bit early to say, but hopefully we'll know more a little bit later.
Whether you view that as competitive to say Sara, and how you sort of are going to go about reducing the couponing going into next year and still retain the sort of nice market share you've got on the scripts.
Yeah, so I didn't hear the first part of your question because you didn't have the mic, but you're talking about the new topical?
Yeah.
Right, okay, yeah. Bhushan, you may want to complete, but from all we know, the very vast majority of patients with moderate to severe acne are treated both with an oral and with a topical. So, if anything, we think this product may take market share in the topical space, but we have never seen a new topical negatively impacting the overall oral antibiotic market. So, the overall oral antibiotic market is a humongous market. It is completely flat, despite the fact that there are some, every now and then, you would expect that the oral antibiotic market may be influenced by some guidelines, not to prescribe them too long, et cetera, et cetera. But in reality, we don't see anything of that. So, Bhushan, anything you want to add?
Yeah, primarily, when a dermatologist is going to prescribe oral antibiotic, it is not for its antibiotic activity, but for its anti-inflammatory activity. That's why our primary efficacy is like 12 weeks. So there is no competition per se because the topical is still used as an antibiotic, but sarecycline is not prescribed or used as an antibiotic, but as anti-inflammatory. That's why we think there should be no competition at all. So we expect to see the data early next year or late this year. When we see the data, we will know whether we will be able to go to phase three straight up in CTCL. And at the same time, we will activate phase two trials in other indications that Peter just talked about, like alopecia areata.
And you'll be handling that
development? Everything is, once we acquire, execute an option, the whole, it's our responsibility.
Is there still an interest in sort of later stage product deals at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we have to try to do both things at the same time. So building up the pipeline, late stage assets in licensing, having our proprietary research product move into the clinic, and at the same time being on the lookout of acquiring immediately accretive business in either some key geographies or some key areas. And, you know, every now and then there are some assets that that are shopped around, if I may say so, and we always take a look at that. We have absolutely the financial power to do those deals, and it would be very beneficial because if we could increase the critical mass of the company to even the further levels in the future, it would actually be helpful to, you know, to fund even better the innovation agenda. So the two go actually hand in hand.
Maybe just on Cesara, how should we think about gross to net, you know, in 2020, and how are you going to manage that transition in terms of reducing the...
Yeah, so for Cesara, so we have actually since this week reduced the generosity of the copay card. So what you should expect in the next couple of weeks is a decrease of prescriptions, but this is actually a good thing because we will get rid of the non-profitable prescriptions. And then once we have a new level of profitable prescriptions, we will start to regrow from that new base, but with very different gross-to-net assumptions. So that's really what we're going to try to achieve in 2020.
We will start preclinical talks in about a year for the product. So it should be in the clinics late next year, definitely.
So this is also, this is a bispecific antibody, so we're really proud with this deal to be the first one to be a, you know, a customer of 23andMe and their very, very exciting things that they do with their databases, and we think that the potential clinical applications of that antibody is going to be very, very interesting. So we're very excited by that one.
So that is definitely what we are thinking. When we start the clinical trials, that will be one of the ways that we will select the patient, select where the site should be, because then you know where the patients are. And also we know where the site has been. So you may choose a really appropriate site where you really get fast recruitment and treatment-naive patients.
Yeah. So actually, ciclopoli in 2019 was relatively stable. And the two reasons for that were, number one, we had some new competition in, our partner Menarini had some new competition in Korea, which they are actually addressing as we speak, and we will see better numbers from that partner business in Korea. But the most important part is actually Germany, where we are a market leader in what actually is a large market in onychomycosis in Germany. We continue to be market leader. But what we have seen in 2020 is that the overall onychomycosis market stabilized compared to 2019. And that was actually a different given compared to the previous years, where we were looking at a very dynamic onychomycosis market. So we are confident for 2020 that we will again be able to grow ciclopoli quite nicely, actually, by the mitigating actions, by new actions that we take in Germany to not only defend our market share, but really continue to increase our market share. So moving forward in 2020, you should see again a growth for ciclopoli. Yeah. Well, you saw it with Qbrexza, where indeed they had a temporary dip in the prescriptions, but then they started to grow nicely again from that new base. But basically, for us, it's quite clear that if we get rid of these unprofitable prescriptions, well, you will see them disappear. So it will have an impact quantitatively on that. So it all depends on, you know, moving forward or continue to increase your profitable prescriptions, get rid of the non-profitable prescriptions, taking a little bit of a hit by getting rid of those non-profitables, and then you have your new base on which you start to grow. To me, it would be surprising that... So basically what we're going to do is that for non-covered patients, our copay card will go up to $125, and that is, of course, a very high amount of patients to tolerate, and we do predict that the vast majority of those non-covered patients will not be ready to pay $125 for the drug and therefore walk away. And these prescriptions will simply disappear. There's no magic bullet to immediately replace them by an increased or an acceleration of the increase of the covered patients. You would need to have an acceleration of the increase of the covered to compensate for the non-covered that will be dropped.
Once you pull back on the copay cards, I guess, how do you prevent the flatlining of scripts? How do you make sure it continues to grow?
By gaining market share in the covered segment. Yeah, I mean, so today, remember, 6% market share is good, but it's 94% market share that we don't have yet, right? And of course, there's many opportunities for covered prescriptions in that enormous bucket. So it's really a matter of continue to gain market share in the covered segment.
To what extent is the pre-biologics segment of atopic dermatitis or psoriasis in strategy? Is that an area that you're working towards?
Yeah, well, you know, in Europe, for example, we have a very nice portfolio in psoriasis now. We have an oral drug, we have a biologic. I didn't dwell on these products, but in many countries we also have topical products for in psoriasis. So if we would have opportunities to build a similar portfolio in atopic dermatitis, you know, with our antibody, with perhaps some kind of topical solution, we would certainly look at that. As you know, there's a lot of oral JAKs who are developed in atopic dermatitis. I'm a little bit dubitative, to be totally honest, on the oral JAKs. You know, they come with baggage on side effects, which makes me believe that the impact of oral JAKs will be reserved to some type of patients. I think dermatologists are a relatively risk-averse population. And so I think that really, really what's going to be the big bulk of the market is going to be the antibodies in atopic dermatitis rather than the oral JAKs. Oral JAKs will take a place, but I don't think they will dominate the market. And then, of course, if there would be very good opportunities for, let's say, innovation in atopic dermatitis with a topical formulation, for sure. I mean, the issue with topicals is that from a pricing and reimbursement perspective, it's more difficult than a systemic drug. Yeah. Prices for any topical in Europe are low. So typically for topicals, you would look at the U.S. market. But even there, the market dynamics for pricing and reimbursement for topicals in the U.S. market have also fundamentally changed. So at the end of the day, it depends on the outcomes what the product would give you. But of course, lebrikizumab, we have to focus on Europe because that's where we have the rights. So if there would be a good topical available, we would definitely look at it for Europe, even for the U.S. But that's how the market in dermatology really shifts. You know, it's with topicals, it's difficult to get a decent price. No.
If you look at the Illumina scripts in the U.S., you can see that they've kind of, after being sort of resilient at the beginning, have now started to kind of tail off and lose share to Skyrizi and so on. So just wondering if you think what the differences are between the U.S. and European landscape and how you can kind of prevent a similar trend.
So, it's rather a question for Sun Pharma, so I will not comment on what Sun Pharma is doing in the U.S. The only thing I can tell you is that we have seen no deceleration of our capability of getting new patients on Ilumetri, even with the launch of risankizumab. As I told you in my speech, I think that if you would talk to KOLs, I would say that 90% of KOLs would admit that IL-23 is the way to go for the vast majority of psoriasis patients, and that the IL-17s or even the TNF-alphas are still the product of choice for PSA patients. In the totality, let's say it's about 30% of patients who have PSA and PSO, right? So it means that in 70% of the cases, call it the pure PSO patients, IL-23 is the way to go. And I think that those ships will all rise with the tide. I'm not going to say that we're going to take 60% market share in the IL-23, but that market is so big and so dynamic that even with a decent market share, you can really have a very nice revenue coming your way. So if I look at the other markets, we have launched in Austria. The product is doing well. We are launching now in Spain, our home market, where, of course, we also benefit from the, I call it the Almiral effect in Spain. And we are opening hospital after hospital or clinic after clinic. That's the way it works in Spain. And again, we see a very nice uptake in the months of November and December with Ilumetri. UK, like always, very small market. You know, even if you go through NICE, you have to open CCG by CCG. But that's exactly what we're doing. And actually, NICE has recognized Ilumetri as the most cost-effective of the IL-23s. So, of course, we're leveraging that. It's not only Germany, it seems to be a pretty homogeneous performance. So we are actually, as we speak, we're talking to the French authorities. So we have had a first meeting with the CEPS. We have submitted the file for the Transparency Commission in France. And we have some kind of fast route approval for Ilumetri in France, a kind of a cost minimization approach, which would, if everything goes well, allow us to launch the product also in France by probably September this year. France is a market where if you get to the Transparency Commission, which is the big challenge, it really is a big market for innovation. You know, French doctors still embrace innovation. I think that if you have a good position in Germany, a good position in France, and a good position in Spain for biologics, you can really make a decent living out of it, yeah.
How should we think about bridging to core EBITDA growth for 2020 as other income is lower? I mean, what are the offsetting growth areas?
Mike, you want to take it?
Yeah, so I think, we talked a little bit about the factors in the opening. you're going to continue to see the you know, the growth of these new launches. You're going to, of course, have a little bit of an offset with the Aczone generification. We will, you know, lose some sales there. And then you're going to probably see a little bit of a need to invest. So, you know, it's too early to give you any kind of guidance for 2020, but if you take all those things into consideration and you think that the other income is also going to start to dissipate over time, you're going to see that, you know, 2020 will potentially have a little bit of pressure on it. But in the midterm, you know, we've got great growth profile. So I think at the core EBITDA level, you know, I think we'll manage that as best we can. And then the other income is really just an artifact of the history, and you're going to start to see that decline over the coming years.
Just on the gross margin, because you made some quite nice progress earlier on in the year, but then you had some of these provisions which sort of offset that. So how should we sort of think about the natural run rate of gross margin going into next year with the genericization of Aczone, and are there any other big sort of drivers, you know, positive or negative, we should think about?
Yeah, I think the Aczone's going to be the biggest impact on the gross margin. Of course, the new launches, the biologics, are a little bit in a better margin shape. So overall, you know, we're looking at trying to keep it relatively steady. And then in the future, as you get out into the midterm, with the new products taking more and more of a share, you should start to see an improvement in the gross margin.
So this is an authorized generic, so we have a settlement with the first filer, Taro, and of course I cannot disclose the details of that settlement, but we will have, you know, some kind of royalty on their net sales, which means that you will see part of that loss of Aczone, part of that loss of Aczone compensated in other net sales. So, but can't really say much more than that. Okay, I'm seeing signs that we should stop. So, thank you very much for your very good questions. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.